Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Stephen Long. Welcome to the X Factor podcast, the podcast for leaders with leaders. And today I'm with Neil Doshi of MQ Capital out of Troy, Michigan. Hi, Neil. How are you today?
Hey, Stephen. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you. All right. So why don't you tell everybody who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So first of all, thank you for having me on. I truly appreciate it. I am the founder of MQ Capital Partners. We're a lower middle market, growth-focused private equity firm. I'm based in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, just about 15 minutes outside of Detroit. And we look for primarily service-based companies, I would say, 2.5 million of free cash flow and above, headquartered in the US or Canada. Our forte is partnering with existing management and founders and helping them grow their business to that next level. I've been doing it now for over 3+ years. Prior to that, I had been in operations in a multitude of industries and businesses and started my career in consulting.
I see. Okay. Yeah, that's a natural transition. So what do you think is the best aspect of being a leader?
Ooh, it's a great first question. I think there's many, but I think the teaching to me is probably the greatest benefit of being a leader. You know, you're teaching and you're educating every day, whether it's, you know, someone at the same senior leadership level as you or an intern. It's the greatest feeling is seeing kind of that, let's call it the proverbial light bulb go on. And that to me is the greatest benefit of being a leader.
You know, that is such a undervalued leadership skill, but it's something that leaders are constantly required to do. And not many really understand, you know, the intricacies of it. And yeah, obviously I'm trained as an educator, so it's great to hear people, you know, talk about that. So, you know, in your development as a leader, what are some of the, you know, well, give me one. What was the primary, teaching technique that you rely on?
I don't know if there's a scientific technique. I mean, I know there's a lot of them people have used, candidly speaking. In my world, it's more listening. I look at it and say, I can hammer. I mean, I'm also a father of 3 kids and I can tell them what to do all day. And truthfully told, whether it's my kids or somebody that I'm leading, half of it goes in one ear and half of it goes out. And they retain nothing, to be candid with you, because they don't care. They just look at it as being a lecture, but rather just understanding the pulse of each individual. I think, you know, we forget everyone's going through a lot, you know, pre-COVID. Now that we're in COVID, it's even worse. But pre-COVID, even then, you know, either you have families, you have girlfriends, whatever it might be, parents, something going on. And if you can't listen, you can't figure out the pulse of that individual you're leading or that team of individuals. And I think that's a strategy I go with is, you know, what's the best way to listen to each individual?
Yeah, that's really insightful because it just brings to mind about empathic listening and active listening. And, right. You know, because of where our society is right now, people, it's not even that people aren't listening. They're not even waiting to talk. They're just talking over everybody else. And so, right. to hear you talk about, teaching and listening is really, it's just so refreshing. So thank you, Neil. I appreciate that.
Oh no, my pleasure. Thank
you.
Yeah,
because I got to tell you, with my clients, it's one of the things that I usually have to teach. You know, so that's really refreshing. So, what do you see as the primary leadership responsibility?
I think there's several. But I think the one I look at is accountability. It's easy to be the hero when things go well for your team and your organization. It's really hard to fall on the sword though. And that doesn't mean be the blame, but, you know, using a sports metaphor, take one for the team. And I think, you know, in this day and age, you know, I worked a long time ago for a large corporate. You couldn't accept blame. You couldn't take blame because you were worried that would affect your bonus or your promotion or things of that nature. But truth be told, whether it's myself or yourself, who's an educator in the space, or anyone that's led teams and organizations, we all make, I'd say, millions of mistakes a day. But we make a lot of mistakes every day, and some are small in nature and some are large. But if we're not willing to take that accountability, how are we going to expect the people below us, the people we're educating and teaching as leaders, to do the same? You know, it goes back to, if I made a mistake and I don't own up to it, then we have this proverbial culture of everybody sweeping everything under the rug or hiding things. And then, you know, a small problem becomes, you know, a gigantic snowball that maybe not be solvable at that point.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's actually one of the principles of my entire business of the trait that I was able to prove is that, you know, one of the tenets is lay no blame. Mm. And, you know, for some people, you know, the finger goes outward.
Yeah.
You know, they blame
100%.
Yeah. And, but for other people, you know, they'll point the finger back at them. Right. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, the more you spend in blame, more time you spend in blame, the less time you have for problem solving.
Well, that's a good point. You're spending all your time upset at someone else when you haven't solved anything. You know, you can sit there and say, well, it's your fault that the wall was painted gray and I wanted white, but just fix it, reprime it and paint it then. Don't spend 6 weeks arguing about the color.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question that, you know, it's my fault. Right? Yeah. But it's also my responsibility. So I'm just going to continue to fix it. And, you know, whatever I just did there didn't work. So I'm going to continue to fix it.
Right. And then how do you learn from it, though? Like, no one wants to learn from it. They made a mistake and it's, well, all right, don't do that again. Well, okay, we maybe won't repeat that mistake, but that mistake tentacles into something else. And if we haven't solved one or understood it, how to rectify ourselves and how to prevent it, we're just going to make that same mistake in some way, shape, or form over and over again.
Exactly.
But we forget that, I think. I think we so worry about making mistakes and being accountable for making mistakes that we go with, it's not me, get defensive. And then by the time anything's resolved, it's been so late in the game that, you know, again, so that little snowflake turns into an, you know, big snowball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. All right. So what advice would you give to other leaders regarding leadership effectiveness?
I think it's trust. I think, you know, we're all worried about, you know, if you're in a large organization, maybe you're worried about hitting a sales quota if you're in sales, or you're worried about some metric. And, you know, there's a reason, be it because you're protecting yourself and maybe you're protecting your family and, you know, all of that. And it's not selfish as much, but it's difficult to expect accountability. It's difficult for people below you to listen if you don't trust them. And I think you have to be willing to trust, and you have to be willing to say, look, I calculate a roll of the dice to say, well, this individual or this team may make some mistakes that could hurt us in the shortfall. But as long as you build their trust, I believe, and that trust is two ways, I believe the rate of long-term success is a lot higher.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really interesting that you've, you know, mentioned trust and accountability, you know, in our interview. And I'm wondering, you know, how do you see those two, you know, together? You know, are they, does one beget the other, or are they mutually exclusive, or?
No, I think they're codependent, right? You know, if you want your team to accept accountability, they have to know that you trust he or she explicitly, that you believe that the mistake was not made in, you know, in carelessness, or was not made in maliciousness, but rather just an honest mistake. And if you can do that, you'll see the benefits. You'll see people, you know, take the accountability and say, look, I made this mistake. All right, what do we do to rectify it? But now we've actually made real progress as, you know, as a team, right? Because I look at, you know, leader, you can be, let's call it the CEO of an organization. You're still part of a team, whether it's a two-person team or a 2,000 or 100,000 organization. It's all a team at the end of the day. That there's all different wheels in this cog that have to work together. And I think if we, as leaders, forget we're part of a team, that, you know, we depend on, you know, let's call it the five or six direct reports, and then below them and below them. If we don't realize that we all depend on each other and that we're all codependent, eventually someone fails and it just really goes back up the ladder now, because it's going to come back to you because you haven't built that trust.
So, you know, this interdependency and, right, and accountability help build trust in a very cynical world.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, What else do you rely on, to help build trust besides, that interdependency
Right.
within the team and then accountability, from yourself to show everybody else that, I'm someone who can be trusted?
I think it's constant communication. I think there's so many ways that we communicate that are not, and this isn't a bag on social media or social conversations like, Twitter or anything like that. There's great places for all of that. But I think when you're dealing people to people, you have to have constant verbal communication. And it can't be through a text message because, again, you can't express emotion in a text message. Or if it's expressed, it may be expressed incorrectly. So, I'm a firm believer. You may have a 15-minute check-in call on a weekly basis, let's say, but that is a check-in call. That's a structured call. It's those unstructured calls where you're trying to gather the pulse because obviously we can't meet for coffee right now, or depending on where you live, there's capacity issues because of COVID where you can't go to restaurants and things like that, which for health reasons makes a lot of sense. But you can still communicate in other ways. You can still do a 10-minute Zoom to say, hey, look, how are you doing? People have a lot going on. They could be trying to take care of their kids and homeschool their kids. They could be trying to manage the house. Their office may be, a cramped little spot in their basement. There's all these other factors. Now, and if we don't have these constant communication, verbal communications, I think that's where that trust, you lose that trust because you don't know what that person's doing. And he or she doesn't know what they're doing either, what you're doing. So you don't have that trust, which again, then you don't have enough trust to build accountability. And then your organization starts to see little holes come in.
But when you talk about communication, then it gets really right down to it is, is your ability to listen and willing to
Right.
listen.
100%. And you said at the very beginning, active listening, right? If you're listening and I'm, on my phone and you're trying to talk to me, or I'm going through 42 emails or something like that, I'm not really listening. I'm there in body, but I'm not there in mind. And I think, again, there's a lot of distractions, and I think the ability to actively listen, I think, is probably the best way to describe this.
And that takes a tremendous amount of impulse control, because
Yes, it does.
even if you're actively engaged in the conversation, you may not be actively listening because you're just waiting to speak, and some people just can't control that impulse to blurt out whatever they want to be able to express and how they want to express it, rather than just being patient, right, and just controlling that impulse. And let more information come, from this person you're speaking to, so you can, basically assimilate that information and then process it. So so then you can come back to them, probably, because most of the time you're talking to people is in a problem-solving regard, right?
Spot on. I call it hero syndrome, right? Like we all want to be the hero. So whenever we come up with an idea, it's like, the light bulb went on and we've discovered something new, or we've walked on a new planet or something. But not every idea needs to be the hero. Not every person needs to be the hero. And we don't need to each individually be the hero in every conversation. It doesn't really accomplish much because, I joke around, but I tell my kids when dad goes into a meeting, I want to be the dumbest guy in the room. Because if I'm the smartest guy in the room, I have nothing to learn. And I'm just then I'm not even going to actively listen, candidly. I'm going to be tuned out. But if I'm the dumbest guy in the room, I have the most to learn and glean. And they look at me and they think I'm crazy, but they understand it now after probably me telling them this 100 times that it's okay not to know everything. It's okay to pick someone's brain. It's okay to be like, wow, that person came up with a great idea,
Well, I have a lot of experience being the dumbest guy in the room, so it comes
It's a
easy.
good ex it's a fun experience though. I enjoy it.
Okay. So, who are your leadership role models, when, and what did you learn from them?
So I think, historically one of my biggest leadership role models was Dr. Martin Luther King. I read a lot of his biographies as a kid. I thought, how do you lead? And you lead, in a way that is not the norm. It's against social norm, right? You're leading by saying, I'm okay to be arrested. I'm okay that you're going to punch, kick me. You're going to say things that are tremendously inappropriate, but I'm going to convey the same message, which is peace, which is unity. And I'm not saying that's what I'm doing as a leader, but the way he went about leadership to me spoke volumes. And then, you know, as a kid, it would also be my father. You know, my dad came from India, maybe a nickel if he was lucky in his pocket. Mm-hmm. And all he did was, to me, he's the American dream. He worked, you know, I don't know how many hours a day. If there's 25 hours in the day, he may have worked 25 hours in the day. Mm-hmm. But he always had food on the table for us, a great shelter. We always had a great education. And he was there for us. You know, I mean, it wasn't quality or quantity. It wasn't quantity, but it was quality. And I would take 2 quality hours over 4 hours where, you know, my parents sleeping on the couch all day.
Yeah. But that leadership model of, you know, of Martin Luther King is really all about, you know, right over might, and not so much of having a position, but having power. You know, and I talk about the difference between, you know, position power and personal power.
Yeah.
And if you have leaders who have personal power in the right positions, you can get a lot done. Right? But people, you know, leaders who rely upon their position to get things done, they'll hit a wall really quickly and they'll experience friction right to that wall.
No, you're right, because they won't get enough buy-in. You're right. They're going to leverage power of being on top versus, you know, the message of what it takes to, you know, why I'm on top. You know, it's always who was on top in that example. So no, you're spot on. I agree.
Yeah, but when you talk about people like Martin Luther King or Gandhi, you know, those people, you know, had absolutely no position, power right. in the society, but they had all kinds of power and they got a lot done. So that's those are really strong role models. So all right, so how do you relax or celebrate?
You know, I'm lucky. Happily married 13 years now. So, you know, whenever my wife and I can hang out, we'll spend some time together. Otherwise, I'll do something active. You know, I wasn't born to sit around and watch TV. I'm not a movie guy, to say the least. But, you know, it's either playing sports or spending time with the family. Those are probably my 2 favorite things to do.
Oh, terrific. All right. So how can people contact you?
Yeah, so, you know, I can provide you my email address, my phone number as well. So, you know, people feel free to email me at m3capital-partners.com. And that would be the easiest way. We communicate from there. And then I'm also on LinkedIn as well, under Neil Doshi, NEAL, and then DOSHI.
All right, terrific. Well, Neil, this has been great. You really brought up some really great points that I think the listeners are going to get a lot of benefit from. So thank you so much for your time. I greatly appreciate it.
No, my pleasure. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So everybody, thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time on the X Factor. Take care.